my fine friends. Welcome back to Destination Discourse. I'm your host, Stuart Butler. Joined today with Adam. And I'm gonna lean into what Caleb said. Adam Michael Stoker. Are we close?
Let us all have a moment of silence for the end of the shtick of guessing Adam's middle name, because Stuart has found the end.
Wow. And it was really Caleb that helped us out. And the fact that you shared,
sorry, I asked for a moment of silence.
Well, as in pure, fashion, I ignore everything you say. So, yeah. I think people, including myself, are very relieved that shtick is over. But you know what? What shtick we're not sad to come back? That is the shtick that is Matt Steiker. How are you, sir?
I'm doing well. The shtick, that's very
yeah.
funny.
Have you ever been called a shtick
yeah,
before?
No,
you
that
ever
was
been
a,
called
that
a
was
piece
a
of
nickname
shtick
for a
before?
while. Yeah, yeah. For sure.
Yeah.
The shtick.
It was shticker, Steiker. Mm-hmm. Like
yep.
it's kind of the Stikester. I don't
yep.
know. We got the Stokester and the Stikester.
That would have killed in the UK.
Yeah. There it is.
Nice to be back, gents. Thanks for having me.
Well, we're glad. It's been a few weeks, and it's just you. So Adam won't forget our other guest's name today. So that's good.
Katie, thank you
Katie
very much.
She still talks about that, Adam.
Yeah, I've probably heard her.
Painful.
Yeah. Well, Matt, we got you back because you wrote an interesting article. We're not going to say what it is, but I think to say that the title of this article was clickbait to its bestest degree, I think, is an understatement. So stay tuned for that. But before we get to that, the best clickbait that has ever existed, it's time for Stu's News.
Matt likes it.
Do we need to play the whole thing every time?
It sounds good today.
Slower. Is it slower?
No, but that would be such a great trick to pull on you, is to slow it down and just make it longer.
Yeah. Would it though? I don't know.
Yes.
So today's Stu's News is a callback to the last one, where I talked about how, Visit Myrtle Beach have really started leaning in hard to Claude Cowork and to a lesser degree called Claude Code, and had conversations with Jeanette Rausch afterwards, and she's a heavy user on the Claude Code side. And I think it got your juices going a little bit, Adam. And even later that same day that we recorded, you texted me and said, OMG, this is like game changer. So I figured we'd check in with you for Stu's News today and see how you've been using Claude Cowork and what your thoughts are so far.
Yeah, you've ruined my life, Stuart. I'll start there.
Again?
And yeah, I was going to say, I guess I need to narrow it down a little bit, specifically mm-hmm. with this Claude Cowork thing. I got access to Claude Cowork at this point, I think it's 10 or 11 days ago. And from a busy work perspective, I've gotten more done than maybe I got done the entire year leading up to that week. And I'm not saying that in a hyperbolic way. This is the first AI technology that has the combination of two things. The first thing is we've always promised that AI will someday be able to do things for you. And this is the first one that actually truly, when I make an assignment, it does things for me. The second one is the ease of use. So OpenClaw, which was about the same time it came out, and you had to buy a Mac Mini and you had to set up a different environment. And for me as a user, I just wasn't technologically savvy enough to actually pull that off. Even though we had a Mac Mini, we even tried and tried to set up a few things and just ran into roadblock after roadblock. The day you shared Claude Cowork with me, I got a ton done that day. And there's a couple things that I think are really interesting. Number one is it has a Chrome extension. And so if you're on a page in Chrome, you can ask it to take over for you and do things. And there's a whole bunch of different ways that I mean, at one point I had 9 different tabs open with the Claude Cowork Chrome extension going, and I was just bouncing from tab to tab to tab to tab. And I did find there's limitations on the Chrome extension, and I ended up having to move several of my projects from the Chrome extension to the desktop app that it provides and start with the desktop app. And that, everything that I moved to the desktop app has also proven to be incredible. I'm going to give you a couple of examples of simple things I used it for, and then more advanced things that I've used it for, and then I'll talk about where we're going at, with our organization as a result, because we've already had an emergency staff meeting as a result of you showing me what Claude Cowork can do.
You're welcome.
So the first simple project I did is I opened up my LinkedIn page, and I on the LinkedIn page opened up the Claude Cowork extension, and I said, I want you to audit my LinkedIn page and tell me where I'm leaving visibility on the table for my peers. I'll audit my content and everything and tell me what needs to be done. It came back with 19 points that need to be improved on my LinkedIn page. And to test it out, I said, okay, of those 19 items that you gave me, what can you do yourself and what do you need me to do? And it said 13 of the 19 I can do myself. And I said, great, do it. I left the page for a little while, came back, and it had done all 13 that I had asked it to do.
Give me an example, Adam, of just like one of those things that it did for you.
Yeah. So our agency used to be called Relic. And when I updated my experience as CEO of Brand Revolt, instead of creating an entirely new description for Brand Revolt as an organization, I just updated my title with the Relic description, probably moving too quickly and just trying to check it off the list, right? And so it went and separated those two company descriptions and those two role experiences to make it more coherent and easier to understand. That's one simple example. Another thing that it did is it audited the performance of all of my content that I've posted on my LinkedIn. And it said, okay, based on what I'm seeing, you're doing too many video podcast clips and not enough written content. Would you
Amen. I mean,
like.
we've all felt like our feed is just drowning with Adam Stoker's
I need
videos. There
Claude
it
to tell
is.
me that.
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome. So it said, do you want me to draft content for you based on what would be really effective? And I gave it access to Destination Discourse. I gave it access to the Destination Marketing Podcast and said, sure, as long as you're using my philosophy. And I'm not going to tell you which one, but my most recent written post as of today is my highest performing one, and it was totally written by Claude Cowork. It asked me if I wanted it to schedule based on its recommended content calendar, and it scheduled my next 10 written posts based on what it thought would be most effective based on my content calendar. So we're talking like this is stuff that someone on my team or me would have spent hours doing, and I was able to, in a single session, optimize my LinkedIn profile and improve my LinkedIn content sharing strategy, right? So that's one simple example. And then we've got this new website product that we've developed for tourism destinations. I'm not going to go too deep into it. I've got other content where people can go find out what it is. But I wanted to be able to do a comprehensive audit of a destination website to evaluate their readiness for this type of a website concept, because the concept is more content first and specifically providing a streaming type experience within the website. And if you don't have enough content, you're not ready for that type of a website concept, right? So I asked it to do an audit of the websites of destinations that I'm meeting with over the next couple of weeks and give me a readiness score. And if they're not ready to give a content roadmap of what they need to develop on the content side in order to be ready for this type of a website concept. And so I'm going to be reviewing these audits with destinations. And the cool thing about the audit that it built is it said, do you want me to build this as a repeatable skill? And I said, yes, absolutely. Once it got the methodology down for these audits, I allowed it to create a repeatable skill. So now, instead of me seeding it with all the, for example, the white paper that we wrote on destination websites and the webinar that we did on destination websites to give it the context each time, now I just have to put in the URL of the destination and it builds the comprehensive audit using the saved repeatable skill in Claude Cowork. Now we're talking about saving dozens and dozens of research and compilation hours. And I've just scratched the surface. I've probably done 40 additional tasks using Claude Cowork that are incredibly impactful to me and my business. But that's probably where I'll stop talking about what I've done and let you guys kind of chime in and ask questions if you want to.
Yeah,
That's
it's
awesome.
great. For us, it's been transformative. I mean, I think there's a couple of things that make it different, right? One, if you've got the desktop app, you can give it access to stuff. So you can give it access to your files, your folders. So it sort of now has continuous knowledge of everything that's going on. So you can say, hey, here's my brand guidelines. So anytime you create anything, I want you to stick to my brand guidelines. Melissa on our team, who heads up our analytics, we're doing a project right now where we're sort of reimagining what our dashboards are going to look like and what we're sharing on a frequent basis with the community, with our stakeholders. And I talked a little bit last episode about that, how she created a video that we're pushing out. Well, one of the things we wanted to do was audit, okay, what's every single data point we have access to? What's the frequency that it updates? Where does it live? Like, could it be better? Like, we wanted to do like this full comprehensive audit that literally would have taken weeks for Melissa to go and do that math. We gave access to all our reports, everything we do, and all our knowledge, and then we said, create this thing. And it's not 100% perfect, but it's saved days and days
Wow.
and days of work. And so
Wow.
it's a game changer. Right. It changes the mindset from you being someone that's commanding the thing to do specific linear tasks, like back and forward, to now you can set an objective and it can tell you how it's going to accomplish it and let you know what you need to do and what it's going to take care of. And the browser access piece is next level. So this is just at the beginning of what we're capable of. And so what we've been saying forever is that the technology is not going to be the limit of what we can do. It's going to be the human capacity. It's going to be our imagination and our courage that's going to be the limitation. Everyone has to get scrappy at this point. Everyone has to be, let's not worry about the intimidation factor. We've got to get comfortable being uncomfortable, because if you don't, everyone else is going to leave you in the dust at this point. This is the point of like where we've hit escape velocity. This is no longer just it can make me sound smart in emails. This is where I can actually accomplish literally anything I can imagine. I can accomplish it now, in a fraction of the time and cost. And it's not that expensive. Like, I don't know, Adam, how much you've spent total on all these projects. You know, we're signed up for the $20 a month thing. We've learned that you don't want to do everything in Cowork, right? You want to do a lot of your thinking in the chat of Claude and then create a prompt that's once you've sort of thought through some things. But I haven't spent an extra penny on Claude Cowork yet. I did got
I
the
blew
free
through.
upgrade, but other than that, it's within the $20 a month thing.
I blew through it and had to go to the $100 a month because of the volume of stuff I was trying to do with it and the complex tasks that I was asking it to do. But I mean, we're talking an additional $80 a month to get me thousands of dollars farther from a productivity perspective. It's a no-brainer.
Yeah, I think we're not far away from our whole team having a $100 a month account at some point, you know.
So, Matt, do you have any response? I have one more thing I want to add, but I don't want to dominate the conversation here.
No, I appreciate it. It actually, and I don't, you guys tell me, but there's a nice dovetail into the conversation and some of the work that I was doing in advance of today and some of the conversations that we were having internally about the idea of retrieval augmented generation as a skill basically of AI, no matter what it is, but that next level beyond just simply the retrieval of information is then the analysis and the being able to actually do something with it. And that's where I think, Stuart, you just said, that's where it starts to get really, really interesting beyond just simply thinking about this like a tool that we've been thinking about for the last several months. It shifts entirely.
Yeah, I'll give you one example, Adam, before you sort of give whatever that was you wanted to add to. But we have a local person here who's media outlet. You would consider him a blogger, right? One person, media outlet that talks a lot about politics and what's going on in our area. And up until now, you know, he's been pretty much a one man band that does everything himself. And he's been using AI to help him generate and create new articles and videos, right? But it's still very manual. He's still at the steering wheel. I'd say over the last 3 weeks, as this technology, Claude Cowork and OpenClaw have unleashed him, he's now created a virtual newsroom, and he's created researcher agents, he's created copywriters, he's created fact checkers, he's created publishers. He's actually got two levels of fact checking. So he's essentially created his own virtual newsroom that's doing everything. They're ideating, creating, checking, and publishing articles at a great volume and at really, really high quality as well. And it's not costing a lot. He's got it to where it costs him about $19 an article to create really well thought out, well researched content that also has a video component. And to put that in perspective, before he was paying $80, $90, it was costing him to create one of those articles. So it's like a, you know, it's a massive decrease in his cost and an increase in his volume. And it's game changer for these folks. Everyone has that capability today. It's amazing.
Two simple things that I just want to add. One of the things that you've actually done a good job of pointing out on this show that's a flaw of mine, Stuart, is when I think of a big idea or a big strategy, sometimes it's difficult for me to connect all the logical coherency dots through the execution, right? And sometimes you have to ask me several questions to help me kind of connect the dots and have the logic follow all the way through. I also think that's a little bit of a human flaw as well. And one of the things that I've found with Claude Cowork is if I give it a principle and ask it to help me logically connect the strategic dots all the way through, it helps maintain coherency in a large document or large strategy. And so that's a massive, massive value to me, especially knowing that that's something that I struggle with, especially articulating that. It really helps me understand at a greater level how to connect my strategy all the way through. The other thing that I want to share before we move on to the topic is this age that we're going into. It's the age of the what if person finally being able to answer their own question. When we think about innovation, you always needed like a visionary and a developer because those were two very different mindsets, or a visionary and a creative, or
Yeah, Steve Jobs and Steve Wozniak.
You needed that pair, right? We are entering the age where the what if guy or the what if lady has the ability to do it on their own. And I think we're going to see a mass scaling of innovation because I don't think the bottleneck was ideas. I think the bottleneck was the combination of ideas and the ability to bring them to life. And I think we're about to see a big change in that bottleneck.
Couldn't agree more. It's
Yeah, I love
great.
it.
It's great. So everyone that's listening, I encourage you to just get comfortable being uncomfortable. Go ask what if and just play around. This is game changing. This is the ChatGPT moment all over again, you know, when everyone started getting on, and it took a little while, but then eventually everyone was using it to write smarter emails. We hopefully a year, two, three from now, everyone is using these tools to maximize their effectiveness. And I'll go back to what we've said since the beginning. I think there are some DMOs out there that are still very cautious, still stuck in the quagmire of legal and IT limiting what they can do. I think if we to continue to serve our communities to the best of our ability and to invest their resources to the best of our ability, it is unethical at this point not to be embracing this technology. If you're not doing the best you can, then you're going to be obsolete. Your DMO is going to be obsolete, and you probably deserve it. So now's the time to get comfortable being uncomfortable. And so,
There was a you reminded me, Stuart, there was a Far Side cartoon, Gary Larson cartoon years ago with a dinosaur sort of sitting by like a 7-Eleven door smoking a cigarette, and the caption was "The real reason dinosaurs went extinct." You know, and the analogy that I was making then at the time I was at San Francisco Travel, and the analogy that I think is a direct parallel to now is that the dinosaurs didn't have the Surgeon General's warning, right? Like they didn't have the ability to say all this medical research has been done, and therefore we shouldn't start smoking, where now all of this work is being done, and we have the ability to look at it and go, this is the kind of thing that if we don't do it, we're going to die.
Yeah,
If we
for
don't
sure.
do it, we're going to be completely irrelevant.
Yeah. And the great thing is, it's easier than it's ever been. Even if you're intimidated, go to Lord Chat and say, "Hey, I'm intimidated. I need help. This is what I want to accomplish. Tell me how to do it." And it's like you've got your own personal expert that's sitting right with you, that's going to handhold you through every step. There's no excuses at this point.
Can one just pro tip for those that are listening and wondering how to get started? It's very, very important that you use chat to understand how to write the prompt for co-work. So the
Yes.
brainstorming happens in chat. And then in chat, you say, okay, now that I feel like we've got the concept created and you understand what I'm trying to create, now I want you to give me the prompt for Claude Cowork that will help me get this done as efficiently and effectively as possible. And it will give you the line by line, word for word prompt that you then just copy and paste into Cowork and watch it go crazy. It's really important that we take the right steps, get your idea to be coherent first, get the strategy aligned first in chat, and then ask it for the prompt for Cowork, and you'll be blown away at how much that saves you time.
Yeah, and a good starting point is just to go to Claude Chat and say, or ChatGPT, it doesn't matter if you're comfortable there. Just say, I work for a DMO. Here's my role. Here's the kind of things I'm doing. I'm looking for opportunities to use AI more effectively. Where should I start? Just type that prompt in, and it's going to walk you through it. And then say, I'm interested in using Claude Cowork, and how can that help me? And then you eventually will get to a point where you can say, give me the prompt. It's spoon fed to you at this point. It's ridiculously easy. Now, we talked about getting comfortable, being uncomfortable a few times, or at least I did. I think we're going to get a little uncomfortable now, at least Adam is, because he's like a 14-year-old boy inside.
What could this be about?
I don't know. But Matt, you want to share with us the title of your article and then tell us a little bit about what you meant?
Yeah, sure. This is something I've been thinking about for a while, and it really the article
Have you?
thanks Adam for the platform on Tourism IQ, but the article was really written as a question more than anything else. And the question headline is, are DMOs paying too much attention to their D and not enough to their O? And it sort of suggests that, we've
Now, hold
actually
on. Can I just say you delivered that as straight as possible with no like smirk?
I don't know what you're talking about. What are
I
you talking
cannot
about?
believe for 1 second you didn't know exactly what you were doing with that title.
I thought it was a really fun way to present it. Come on.
Okay. It's
It's
very
fun.
clickbaity, but
Yeah.
very good.
Help us understand why that's a problem.
Well, so we've spent a lot of time, the industry has spent a lot of time talking about the M, right? In DMO. And should it be marketing? Should it be management? Should it be stewardship? Should it be leadership, et cetera? And yet I was looking at both of the letter before and the letter after and going, there's some dissonance happening there that most DMOs are focusing on the destination because it's this beautiful, incredible, whatever place that they want people to come visit, and not enough on the organization, right? So that's where the D versus O comes in. And the reason for the question is really it comes from that idea that we are, for all intents and purposes, we are an intermediary. We are holding on to information, whether it's on our website, in our visitor center, in our convention sales staff, in our, in our social media, whatever. We are holding on to information, and we are sharing it with people when they ask us or when we think it's appropriate for them to hear it. And we're sharing information about the destination, and that's great because that's the information that they want. But our stakeholders are looking to prove our value, or they're looking for us to prove our value on a daily basis. They want to know that we are doing what we're supposed to be doing. They want to know that we are, utilizing the funding that is being provided, in particular, by the way, in many cases, most cases by the hotels. They want to know that we are using the funding properly. And the minute that we stop focusing on the organization and sort of where that information passes through and focus just on the destination, then we forget our role in the thing. If all I'm talking about is Portland, Maine, or Myrtle Beach, or Salt Lake City, or whatever it is, then there are, as you guys know, thousands, if not millions, of places for somebody to get information on any one of those destinations. Why should they come through me? And if they're not coming through me, I can't stand in front of my stakeholders every quarter, every year, my board of directors, whenever, and say, this is what I did. This is what my value is. And if I can't do that, I got a whole bunch of stakeholders going, why do I need you? They're getting their information everywhere. There's millions of sites. Without you, I don't know that I'm losing anything.
Yeah. So it's really interesting you bring this up now, because we're going through this in Myrtle Beach in a serious way. We're having conversations about, what our role is changing the name of our parent organization right now. We announced that in a couple of weeks. By the time this comes out, will actually be announced. So actually, I can talk about it because I can self-embargo. So we're going to become, and remember, we're a chamber and the DMO. So the parent organization is going to become the Greater Myrtle Beach Collaborative. And underneath this, we're going to have the Chamber of Commerce, Visit Myrtle Beach, and then we're going to have our foundation, the Partnership Grand Strand. Took me a while to remember that name. But we're also inviting other entities, organizations to be a part of the collaborative, is what we're referring to as the collaborative. And it's really taking a regional look to everything that is needed in our community, from resident sentiment and quality of life to economic prosperity and business health, and up into and including advocacy and the political landscape. And so we're taking a lot more holistic view. Now, Visit Myrtle Beach's role in that specifically is to be a steward or an overseer of the entire tourism economy, and we've had a lot of conversations recently about who our customer is as an organization, right? We often think DMOs, we think our customer is the visitor, right? And reality is they're an audience we're talking to. They're the customer of our customer, but they're not really our customer. Our customer, the other is DMOs. If you'd asked me a year ago, I would have said our customer is our resident. Like, we exist to improve the quality of life for the residents. And I think we've shifted now to saying, no, that's not quite right. I don't think we're actually serving them directly. Now, they're a beneficiary of what we do, and it's the outcome of what we do. But when we really think about who we're serving, especially in our case, we're a member-driven organization and we're part of the Chamber of Commerce, the business community is our primary customer. To some degree, municipalities are our customer because they're giving us money to perform a task. And when we look at them as a customer specifically, I think we've done a bad job. You know, there's conversations right now about, is our tax stack right? Are we investing as a community in the right things? Visit Myrtle Beach is a very healthy budget that all goes to quote unquote marketing. And I think there's a misunderstanding on what marketing is. Like, we say destination marketing organization, and I think most folks think advertising when they hear marketing. Mm-hmm. And so we've made a deliberate shift as we're talking to elected officials, talking to our media, talking to our residents of, no, it's not just advertising. That's certainly an important part of it and always will be, but it's also reputation management. It's public relations and promotions. Sure. It's groups and meetings and conventions. It's sports tourism, which is massive for Myrtle Beach. Before we had sports tourism, Myrtle Beach was dead outside of Memorial Day and Labor Day. Just no one was here. Now we're 10, almost 12-month destination where we're busy all the time.
Stuart, do you think about workforce and infrastructure within
to that. So, yeah. It's airline, it's mm-hmm. Airlift. Yep. We're working yep. with that airport to drive new routes and new carriers. It's attracting other big events too, mm-hmm. like festivals and PGA Tour events and stuff. So this scale and scope of what we do is significant. And I think what we're starting to do is talk about the counterfactuals. And this is something that a couple of our guests before have talked about. Emily Zatucci is one of those that talks about, like, showing the counterfactuals. And mm-hmm. like, what would happen if we didn't do all these things? Like, what would really happen? We'd go from 2,000 restaurants to a couple of hundred restaurants. We'd go from clean beaches to there wouldn't be money to clean the beaches. So yeah. Really talking about the impact we have as stewards of the economy is great. And I think we're beginning to evolve our thinking too, to what you're talking about, which is, it's not just the promotion side and the driving the business side. It's also the resources available, right? Yes. The natural resources,
yes.
making sure the water's clean. It's also yep. making sure yep. workforces. It's also making sure that we have equitable laws. It's making yep. sure
safety.
That,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, public safety is a part yep, of it. So
absolutely.
Any single thing that goes into ensuring that we have a healthy and prosperous tourism economy is our responsibility mm-hmm. to make sure it happens. Now, that doesn't mean we're the lead or the tip of the spear right. on every single right. aspect of that. Because like air travel, air service, we're certainly not the tip of the spear. The airport is, right, which is county run. But without us, it's worse. Without yes. us, it's not happening to the best it can. And so our job is yeah. to sort of map out everything that needs to happen in our community related to tourism. Like an example, we a couple recently. Utilities is a massive thing. Muddle Beach had a challenge with, we had a moratorium on gas connection. We maxed out the amount of natural gas coming to our community. And so the local Dominion had put a moratorium on signing any more commercial gas connections, which put a delay on new hotel builds. We got about $2 billion in new hotel bills that are ready to go, and they had to put a moratorium. So we stepped up as an organization and said, we're going to make sure this gets taken care of. And we had to change the state law to allow for more gas to come in. We're dealing right now with waste management. Like we're at a point where and natural landfills are going to fill up because of increase in tourism and population growth. We have to have a seat at that table, at least a voice in the conversation, to make sure we're protecting our community and our environment for the next 20, 30, 40 years. So I think our purview is expanding as a DMO or DSO, and we've got to make sure we do a better job communicating that. Because if we're just seen as the promotion or the agency for the destination, we're not going to be relevant in a world where intermediaries aren't part of the conversation and how people choose and book travel.
So I think without a little bit of kind of massaging of this concept, gosh dang it, I wish you had never written this headline.
Your mind out of the gutter, Aaron Stokely.
I'm trying. So I really think that if we don't talk about this correctly, people are going to walk away with some misconceptions. So the start of the conversation, Matt, is where you talked about that we focus so much on the marketing that we that the D and the O, there's some dissonance between the two, right? And I think it's a pendulum that has a tendency to swing too far one way or the other. However, I think a simple way to think about this for destinations is outside of 50 miles from your destination, it's all about the D. And it's because the people that Stuart, Stuart,
I'm
who's
gonna
12
clip that
now?
out. I'm
Who's
totally
12
clipping that.
now?
I'm clipping that out.
And so when you get outside of 50 miles, nobody cares about the O. But when you, darn it, Stuart, stop smirking.
Clipping that one out
But
too.
when you get close around the organization, a little more intimate, if you will, it's all about the O. And so it's
You
really
are leaning in way too far.
So,
It's
let me pick up on that then,
okay.
Adam, because
I think it's
that's
time somebody did.
you Can we have a grown up in the room?
yeah. Let me see if I can put my finger on that, Adam.
Oh my God. We just
Too
went
many.
from PG to E.
Yeah, there's the rating. Too
Oh
many.
man.
Because you sent that back to me in a text, and I really appreciated that sort of observation. And again, the thing that I go back to is that geography is irrelevant when I'm a stakeholder looking to prove or disprove the value of the DMO. If I've got somebody from outside 50 miles, 100 miles, 300 miles, whatever it is, coming to Myrtle Beach, but I can't count them, guess what? I don't get to take credit for them coming. That's one less person that I get to say to a hotelier, I did this, I did that.
Yes, and
Right?
while I understand that, you're looking at that from the perspective of proving value to a stakeholder,
Yeah, absolutely.
whereas
Absolutely.
the people that we target outside of 50 miles, we have to demonstrate value to them in order to get them to visit, right?
100%. Yes.
Yeah,
But
but that's
again,
different. We're not
we are the official, tourism resource for whatever the destination is. So they have to come through us in order to get the best information. Right? So somehow I can't just be out there
That's
saying
biased.
Myrtle Beach is great because believe it or not, guess what? Like if they're not coming through Stewart's organization, it's irrelevant how many people are coming if ultimately he can't take credit for that.
I don't know that I agree. I
No?
don't know that I agree.
Okay.
So I think we as an industry have a habit of overstating our influence. I think if I was being realistic,
For sure.
because we're about incrementality, right?
Yes.
If Visit Myrtle Beach didn't exist, we'd still have hotels, we'd still have restaurants, we'd
Sure.
still have visitors, right? We
Sure.
had visitors before we were in existence, before we were well funded. I mean, we literally went from a $4 million a year organization to a $40 million a year budget overnight when we introduced our tourism development fee. And we
Sure.
went from, in that case, from 12 million visitors a year prior to the TDF to now close to 20 million. So it's 6 million incremental, right? And I don't even think it's fair for us to say, hey, we can claim credit for the additional 6 million. It could have gone down. It could have gone up. I don't know. But even if I was being super generous, only a third of the folks that are coming here, I could claim a result as
Totally
being.
fair.
And I think that's being very, very generous. I think it's probably significantly smaller than that. So we're about maximizing, right? We're about taking a destination that already has assets in promoting, because without the assets, we can't promote it. I think 99% of the visitors that come here have no idea that a DMO exists, has no idea that they even touched one of our influence points, because when they see, Today Show talking about Myrtle Beach and our autism friendly work,
Sure,
they don't
sure.
know that that
Nope.
was conjured up. Or when they see a
Nope.
restaurant just got a James Beard
But if it went
on
away,
list, they
you
don't
would
know.
notice. If it went away, you would notice.
Or we the community would notice, the
Yeah,
visitor might
absolutely.
not, right? Consciously, they wouldn't know. They would just be seeing something else in its place. So they don't think about it. I don't think we need to worry so much about providing value to them. I think it's more about educating them and driving awareness and attention about our destination. I don't think they value what we do at all. They behave a certain way because we're influencing that. So I think our proof of our existence in our legitimacy is all about the locals and especially the folks that control the purse strings and our members. So again, who is our customer? To us, it's elected officials in the people they represent in it in a way, and it's our businesses. That's who we have to justify our existence to. And if we continue to justify our existence to members through clicks from our website, through direct measurable ROI from a campaign to a conversion, we're in a lot of trouble because that's going to
Yes.
become very
Agreed.
opaque in the very
Agreed.
near future.
Yeah.
So I think we've got to start getting paid and valued for what the outcome is as a result of us,
Yep.
and not necessarily the direct what people get from us individually. And so how we do that is to talk about the full scale of what we do, not just the advertising, not just
Yes.
the promotion, the full
Yes.
scale of what we do, and paint the counterfactuals. If we didn't do this, it's bad, and here's why.
Yeah. Adam, did you have something there? I was going to jump in.
I think the place where I'm struggling is
Yeah.
if we overinvest on the actual relevant side, there's a rabbit hole that we can go down that would actually sacrifice the visitor experience in some way, shape, or form. And so what I mean by that is, Stuart, you mentioned the house of cards of website clicks that have been the primary method of demonstrating value to stakeholders for the last however many years. But now when traffic's going down, now when AI is disintermediating the experience almost entirely in some cases, that really hurts our ability to communicate value. But if we focus so much on taking credit, and that's the word you were using, Matt, is taking credit for that visitation, you're going to sacrifice some inspirational branding and just experience promotion tactics in an effort to try to make sure that you can claim credit for all of the impact that's happening in the destination. And that's my fear, is the overcorrection of, because outside the destination, the D is all that matters. Inside the destination, the O is all that matters. And I think it's really like, at least I can give everybody that's listening kind of a clear framework for that of hey, within 50 miles, you need to promote the O. And outside of 50 miles, you need to focus entirely on the destination because they don't care about the O.
Yeah, that I agree with. And Matt's run sessions at different conferences about marketing, right? Telling people what we do locally, and even gave I in one of the sessions, it was a group conversation setting. Someone gave me a really good insight that we shared on the show before, which is when you're negotiating paid media contracts with people outside, like say it's a national company like iHeart or Pandora or something like that. Negotiate in some local media for free, a value add that you use to promote your market, the marketing.
Promote the
But
O.
I think it goes beyond that, right? Because I think if we still try to tie our value to vanity KPIs, and those KPIs become our goal and our target, then we're in trouble, right? The old adage that when a measure becomes a target, it's no longer a useful measure, has never been truer than it is today. And so we've got to double down. Where we need to be spending time is on relationships, is on human conversations, not on reports, is actually getting to spend time and break bread and sit across and have real honest conversations with elected officials, with our primary stakeholders, with the investors in our organizations, to understand their challenges and then to make them aware of what our role is and how we can help and show victories, right? So I'll give an example. The fact that we were at the table with this gas situation, natural gas situation in Myrtle Beach, we're not doing that to take credit. And if we start with the idea of we want to be the hero, we want to take credit, we're going to set ourselves up fair. We just went there with a collaborative mindset and said, how can we help? How can we leverage our resources, our time, our money, and our energies and our skills to positively impact the outcome? And there's hundreds of people that now saw what we did and appreciate what we did, that now see a value in us that is not a measurable value in terms of a report, right? But it made a positive impact on our
For sure.
community.
For
So
sure.
we've got to be so
Locally.
ingrained and so collaborative with everyone in our community that they just instinctively know what our value is. We don't have to tell them about it. We don't have to seek credit about it. They feel it. It's real.
And
That's
again,
how what we need to operate.
I think I completely get the idea that within a certain geographic framework, that O is really, really important. The thing that I keep coming back to is the idea that we are effectively, DMOs are, I should say, effectively an intermediary, and that somebody here needs information about a place or a company or a product or a service over here, and they're coming to the intermediary because the intermediary, to some extent, is the aggregator or the curator of that information, right? And I feel like what I'm seeing is the Tower Records of the world or the Blockbuster Videos of the world, which became this expert in music or came this expert in video or whatever it was, that then all of a sudden, guess what? There's a completely different way. I don't need them anymore because I can get the information about that thing or I can get those things from elsewhere. And as soon as I can get those things from elsewhere, that intermediary is irrelevant, right? That again, if I as Tower Records can't talk about sales or Blockbuster Video can't talk about rental revenue, I'm irrelevant as a business, right? So again, I totally appreciate that within 50 miles I have to be talking about the O. And Adam, I also totally get your point about like you don't want to compromise or sacrifice the information about the destination in favor of the organization. But I'll read you something that we wrote. This is years ago, and it's still part of the San Francisco Travel Manifesto. And the thing that I like about it so much is that it gives the organization a role. I won't read the whole manifesto, but it says, as proud as we are to help people arrange their visits to San Francisco, we see our mission in even broader scope. We believe our true value lies not just in our ability to sell our city, but in our role as curators of the most interesting 49 square miles on the planet. We are the San Francisco Travel Association, and we are the window to the city by the bay. It gives them a role, right? You have to come through the window in order to get the best experience because they're the ones that can give you the best experience.
Yes, but it's not the world we live in anymore, right? Because we're not going to be the role of us being a trusted source of information will probably remain a role, but it won't be our primary role in the future because AI knows everything that exists that's ever been published about our destination,
Sure,
especially the
sure.
generic information, where things are, when they're opening, what the events are. Like AI will just know that, whether it's scraping it from us or the individual properties, it just knows. So us spending our energy there makes no sense anymore. And it used to. It used to be we were the window, right? But now our job is to dress what's inside the window a little bit more to make sure that's as good as it can be. Because we talked again on the show about how the destination was the reason people used to travel, but now it's more about experiences. So we've got to make sure we've got to be invested and make sure customer service is top-notch, that people are investing in their product, that they're creating novelty, that they're using social media appropriately, that they're turning their visitors into crazy advocates that are going and spreading and evangelizing about our properties. So our role is shifting. We're still doing stuff that the businesses individually can't do at the same scale, but we're sort of shifting our role to be more curators of the experiences, not mm-hmm. just the stories, you know, mm-hmm. which is what we were. We still yeah. want to tell the stories, and we still want to do it from a unique first person novel way where we're sure. creating content no one else has.
Sure.
But we're distributing that in different ways, not just our website, but on social
yep.
media.
Yep, sure.
And we need to forget about ownership. Like the fact that, I mean, content is being democratized for sure, but yep. publishing is too. And so we don't necessarily need to feel like everything has to live on our website or everything has to live on yes. our social channels.
Yes.
We just need to make sure it's happening. And that sometimes that's just educating our members on how can they use the best tools and how can we help assist them create more volume of content and better yep. experiences and stuff like that.
Well, and with that, then the strategy, Stuart, that you're deploying there about helping folks understand the full range of what capital M marketing is all about, as opposed to just the one P of promotion, yeah. you know, mm-hmm. slash advertising, but product price place. For anybody who took those marketing courses, those are equally essential within a marketing roles, but DMOs have essentially been relegated just to destination advertising organizations more than mm-hmm. anything else, right? And so, yeah. so when you talk about product and all of those things that you went through before, whether it is infrastructure, you know, whatever it is, all of those are part of that product experience that is being created ultimately for them that you then can promote or that then can be promoted, I should say, right?
Yeah. Yeah. 100%.
Yep.
I'll tell you this. I have not reported on website traffic, email database size, any of these sort of traditional metrics to our board, to any of our stakeholders in over 3 years. Mm. And not one time have we been called out for it because it's just not relevant. It's, yeah. it's, we need to look way higher at what the net impact is of all of our efforts. You know, we need yeah. to measure how effective we are, but ultimately we need to measure how healthy our economy is.
Mm-hmm. I want to dig into why that is, Stuart. Visitation impact is being felt by the stakeholders. And because they see the value of what you're doing, they are not questioning your website clicks. They're not questioning your newsletter size. And it's because you're generating the visitation to back it up, right? And so I think you'd be a lot more scrutinized. Right, yeah, you'd be a lot more scrutinized if they didn't feel the visitation. This is why I have a fear of going so far focusing on the organization mm-hmm. and abandoning. And I know you're not suggesting to abandon it, Matt, so don't take this as that.
That's right.
But
that's
like,
right.
if we don't focus on the destination promotion, which is getting visitation to the destination, it doesn't matter how much work we do on the relevant side, on the organization side. If we don't have the visitation to back it up, it doesn't matter. And that's why I don't want an totally overcorrection
agree.
Here.
Totally agree with that. Yeah, I mean, Stuart, you and I have talked, and Adam, I can't remember if you've seen the concept that Stuart and I had talked about a while ago about like what would happen if you just shut the tourism industry down for a day. You know, there's something so interesting. It plays directly into the idea of the counterfactual, right? Like, what if this happened? And to me, the benefit of that ultimately, I think anyway, is twofold. At least that's the way that I had imagined it. The one fold of it is people start to see the value of the interdependence of the resident and tourism economy, right? Like that coffee shop couldn't stay alive if it weren't for tourists coming, right? So yeah. definitively, like that dual economy, interconnected economy is really essential to any of these destinations that we're talking about. But the other piece of it is the organization that is leading it, the organization that is driving it, that again, without that organization, none of that happens, at least not in the same way. And we saw that in Colorado. We saw it in the state of Washington when they shut down their tourism offices, right? We saw the numbers plummet, right? So what I appreciate the sort of point counterpoint that I'm not arguing any more one extreme than you're arguing the other extreme.
Yeah.
But I do think that at some point that organization, and I we could debate for another time or a longer time, like the within 50 miles or not. I yeah. certainly get within the 50 miles, but to me, there's something that's really important still about making sure that people, and sure, again, I'm hearing your voice in my head, but people are still knowing where they're coming through in order to get to that place. So it's not just simply random information so that I can, in some way, take that responsibility and take that credit for it and report that back to my stakeholders. Whatever that is, that could be convention sales, right? Like these folks are coming in to me and I am turning around and I am passing that along to you in the same way that leisure wants to, in some way, have some kind of a metric attached to it. And I don't disagree that the metrics that we're currently using are not necessarily the best.
Yeah. And I think different folks care about different metrics, right, and
Yeah, I
different
agree.
things. We had a conversation with a elected official recently who ran on a platform of we need more fun events in the area and we should be investing more money in bringing and retaining events. And when we actually sat down and had a conversation and shared a little bit about how current events work and what money is being spent, you know, we'd ask them, like, what do you think would be an amount out of the budget we spend to invest in events? And he was like, I don't know, $1.8, $2 million a year. And we're like, well, we're spending a lot more than that already. You know, we've got things like the One Flight Myrtle Beach Classic and the largest country music festival on the East Coast, and like these other massive events that we're incentivizing in different ways. World's Strongest Man's coming back in a couple of weeks. You know, these things take money and effort to get. And so this notion that we could spend $1.8 million to magically create all these events was just it was based in belief and not the actual reality of what's going on. But as soon as we explained that, he's like, well, that makes total sense. Like, I had no idea that that mechanism exists. And so we've adopted a new phrase within our organization. It actually came from a president of our chamber, but we were presenting some stuff one time internally. He goes, man, this stuff doesn't just happen, does it? And so we've started using that as a sort of
That's great.
external rallying cry. It's like, it
That's great.
doesn't just happen. Like,
Yep.
these things that you enjoy that benefit
That's
your
great.
quality of life, they don't just happen. We're responsible in part or in full to make sure that these things happen. And all
Yeah.
that's things I listed at the beginning from air service and sports and events, all of that stuff doesn't just happen. Our DMO is responsible in large part for making those things continue.
Mike Gallagher, who was one of the founders of CityPass and became a mentor of mine for a while, was very fond of saying, in the case of a DMO, he was talking specifically about Visit California at the time. And you guys have probably heard this, but we do for the industry what the industry can't do for itself. Right. And it's a really, really important thing. That's why these DMOs were created in the first place.
Is
You know?
exactly why we were created.
Yeah.
You're
Yeah.
100% right.
Yeah.
And we need to ask that question. Like, as the world shifts, as this disruption
Yes.
happens, as consumer behavior changes, as expectations change, what is our role? What are the
Yes.
things that our members and our community can't do for itself?
Yes.
That's where we need to focus our energy
Yeah.
and our time.
Yeah, for sure. That's great. I love it.
Wow, this is cool. I like these debates where folks are coming at it from different
Yeah.
sides, and we don't necessarily fully align, but we come to a sort of a place at the end where it's like, oh yeah, this sort of has some clarity to it. I think we learned today that you need the D and you need the O. So
Yeah,
that's
I do
great.
have a request for
And in
people that
fact, the
may
D
consider
guides you to
bringing.
the O, Stuart.
Quite often.
I see, I have a request for people that may be considering bringing a topic to the show. And I would just ask that as you think through the structure of the topic, that you understand that I am a 14-year-old child at heart, and that if you bring a topic and tee it up like this for me, I just can't help myself.
And if you can't put yourself in that mind space, just go find a regular 13, 14-year-old boy and
Yeah.
have him read it, and that'll be your litmus test for
You'll know
sure.
quickly.
This is great, Matt. I appreciate you. You're welcome back. Obviously,
Yeah, thanks, man.
anytime.
Always,
Are there
always
any
a pleasure.
final takeaways or thoughts that you want to share with the audience? Just listen to this juvenile delinquency.
No, I echo what you just shared that being able to debate this in a way that allows voices to be heard who have different perspectives is really important. And I would say that probably as a as a thought for the industry, that unfortunately for whatever reason, when we sit at conferences and we have panels at conferences, it's very rare that we find this same kind of sort of respectful disagreement where everybody is sort of pushed into the middle and everybody agrees on everything. And it's harder, I think, as somebody sitting in the audience to really take away the sort of intellectual curiosity and intellectual discernment that needs to come from hearing people have this kind of discourse, you know?
That's why the show exists, man. It drives me crazy. I think anyone that puts on a conferences, like really think about what Matt just said. Like really try to set up a dais of folks, especially on panels, that don't have the same perspective, that are willing to disagree publicly. And if you don't know who those people are, I think all three of us would be willing to play that role of the dissenter on any topic.
I wrote a news, and I know we got to go, but I wrote a newsletter specifically to the conferences in our industry in the last week
Wait,
or so.
did you write it or did the AI write it?
None of your business, Stuart. It's none of your
I may have
business.
seen this, Adam. I may have seen that. That may
But
have, yeah.
yeah, I talked a lot about, and by the way, just to be clear, I'm sure AI played a part, but the way we do it is I have a meeting with my team about what I want to talk about, and then they write it up and then bring it to me for approval, and so it works out great. But anyway, I wrote about what I think the new conference format and feel needs to be if you want to truly engage the audience. And I was really proud of that piece because I think something needs to change. It's exactly what you just mentioned, Matt.
Yeah, I think if anyone listening wants to embrace that, what we should do is say, sponsor this event. We'll host it in Myrtle Beach. We'll be panelists. It'll be a win-win-win. Like, that's great. We'll bring tourism to Myrtle Beach,
I like
and
it.
everyone else is happy. It's good. So
Yeah.
let's do it.
Don't go through the O though. Don't go through the O. Just
Well, that's where it ends.
Oh man, Adam, any final thoughts other than
No,
those?
Matt, I
And where can they
appreciate
find
your
you?
thought leadership in the space.
Thank you, bud.
It really is. It's very stimulating to read what other people have to say and then be able to react to it, have a conversation. But stop it, Stuart. To have a conversation about it, it's been really valuable to me, and I want to keep this going and do it more often.
Yeah, great.
So yeah, great stuff.
Thanks, bud.
Yeah,
Appreciate that. Always enjoy.
Adam, I think you were the one that introduced Matt and me, and so I appreciate that because he's
Yeah.
definitely challenged me, and he's even come up with crazy ideas that even I'm not quite comfortable executing quite yet. So
More to come on that, by the way.
yeah,
Yeah.
good,
Wait,
good, good. Stay tuned for the O in Myrtle Beach, right? I don't even. All right.
I may have already done this, Matt. Adam confused me. Can you let people know where to find you?
Yeah, it's M. Steiker at maddenmedia.com. Soon to be, actually, I don't know what the URL is going to be, but with the recent acquisition of Karsh Hagen, there will be an adjustment to the URL and to our website address, but for or to our email addresses rather. But for now, you can get me at M. Steiker at maddenmedia.com or on LinkedIn.
Great. And Adam?
LinkedIn, Adam Stoker, adam@thebrandrevolt.com, or of course, you can find me on Tourism IQ.
And by finding Adam on LinkedIn, what he means is you'll find his robots that are doing all his work now.
They're
So
going
if you
to
get
get
weird comments, is that the excuse when you try to like slide into people's DMs now? You're going to be like, it was the AI. That's what it was.
What does that mean?
I don't know.
How long, by the way, before you are doing that as like audio animatronically, like as an actual AI figure where you're doing your blogs and it can just pump out constant blogs, video blogs of you promoting something.
It's coming. Offline, I'll tell you about something I asked it and wanted it to do.
Oh, I'm
So
psyched to
we can
hear it.
talk about that when
I'm
we're
psyched to
not
hear it.
recording.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Awesome. Thank you guys for being here. Thank you for listening. Apologies if we offended anyone, but it's Matt's and Adam's fault for sure. You can find me at stuart.butler@visitmyrtlebeach.com and you can find me on LinkedIn. Thank you for listening. Until next time, this has been Destination Discourse.
Thanks, everybody. I actually think we were extremely mature.
I do too. We could have pushed it. We definitely could have pushed it.
Just got my Indian voice. Thanks.